Welcome back. This is podcast number 4 in the podcast series on health topics. My name is Kelly Gregg of KellyGreggGRBGG.com, and I am producing this series of podcasts because I got tired of making podcasts of my book, Diet and Health. The purpose of these podcasts are to both inform you and try to persuade you to buy my book, available on my website. This topic actually has something to do with diet and health. Generally, most adults do not drink much milk. Milk can be a valuable food for the young, as it contains protein and calcium, which can be deficient in the diets of some cultures who have high-carb diets. In the U.S., most children get plenty of protein and calcium. Adults do eat dairy products, such as butter and cheese. Butter is primarily made of fat, and we have gotten rid of the protein in the processing. Cheese is also a food which has been digested by bacteria, and hence the protein has been modified. Milk from dairy cows has been used for thousands of years in many parts of the world. Almost everyone in the United States has drunk dairy milk and is familiar with the attributes of this food. With the advance of technology, we have now determined there are two forms of the most common milk, designated A1 or A2. Most all the milk we drink is A1 unless it is specifically labeled A2. Milk is composed of the most part of water, lactose, fat, and protein. The protein is casein, which is a family of proteins found in mammalian milk, comprising about 80% of the protein in cow's milk and about 40% of the proteins in human milk. About a third of this casein is labeled beta casein. This is the difference between these milk. A1 milk has a histidine amino acid at position 67 in beta casein, whereas A2 milk has a proline amino acid at this position. During digestion, a 7 amino acid peptide called beta-casomorphin 7, or referred to as BCM7, which is a side chain, can be cut away from the alpha-1 beta-casein protein by these enzymes, but these same enzymes cannot form this protein in A2 milk. Hence, A2 milk does not contain this 7-atom amino acid. It appears that originally cow's milk was A2, and that a mutation occurred in the gene responsible for the formation of casein, such that it formed A1 milk. In other words, allowed the formation of BCM7. This mutation was subsequently spread throughout the dairy cow industry. Selective breeding has resulted in a proliferation of this type of milk. You could ask yourself, why would that occur? Like other foods, the capitalistic system drives efficiency. It appears that cows with this mutation may produce more milk. Hence, if you were a farmer 1,000 years ago, the bull you would use to impregnate your dairy cows would be the ones whose cows subsequently produce more milk. This makes perfect sense. As breeds developed, Holsteins became good milk producers, and now most of the milk is A1. About 70% of Guernsey cows produce A2 milk, but who knows what breed milk you get when you buy the milk at the store. The digestion in the gut of A1 milk results in the production of BCM7, whereas the digestion of A2 milk does not, secondary to the proline amino acid. Some believe this molecule results in milk intolerance in some individuals. This is a morphine-type molecule that interacts with opioid receptors and may demonstrate some of the same effects as morphine in the gut, which can be constipation and cramping. There is not a lot of consensus if this occurs in most humans, but numerous anecdotal reports indicate that there may be something to it. My personal opinion, which is not medical advice, is that this is a problem in some adults, and since children often are the main consumers of milk, intake of A1 may contribute to later problems. The cow will make A1 or A2 milk depending on its genetic makeup, which can be tested. Selective breeding with the proper sperm can make the offspring A1 or A2. Guernsey cows are mainly A2, while Holsteins may make a mixture of A1 and a combination A1-A2 milk. Both kinds of milk are equally healthy and both contain lactose. If milk intolerance, not lactase insufficiency, is perceived to be a problem in a milk-drinking person, it is a simple matter to spend a couple extra bucks and try A2 milk for a while to see if it makes a difference. It's possible kids will do better with A2 milk. I like to look at the historical perspective when looking at food and diet. Throughout history, crossbreeding in plants and animals has been done primarily to increase production, not necessarily to increase nutrition. In the past few decades, we have been using genetically modified plants with the same goal, that is to increase production. We have been able to insert genes of other species into animals and plants to change the food, often without regard to nutrition. Your government tries to protect you against anything bad happening to you if you eat these products, but nutrition concerns are minor. If drinking A1 milk for years caused a somewhat increased incidence in some common human problem, say constipation, depression, or even heart attacks, we would never know it, as these are chronic conditions. Just like the obesity epidemic, there are many other factors involved. I am not saying A1 milk is bad for you. I'm not even saying whole milk in general is bad for you. It ends up most adults do not drink much milk anyway. If I were a milk drinker, I would probably stick with A2. If I were a food engineer and had young kids, I would probably go with A2. It is just slightly more expensive than regular milk, and Walmart carries it. Butter does not contain protein, or at least not very much, so it does not matter if it is A1 or A2. Cheese is a product that is exposed to an acid environment and exposed to bacteria or mold. This markedly affects the proteins present. Cheese could be considered to be partially digested. There are thousands of different kinds of cheese. Scientists have investigated the effect of cheese aging with both A1 and A2 milk. The results are only consistent in that A2 cheese does not produce any BCM7, as it did not start out with any. A1 cheese is all over the map, but usually lower amounts of BCM7 and sometimes none. It is not that easy to figure out if the cheese came from A1 or A2 milk, but it probably doesn't make any difference, since aged cheese is going to have a small amount or no BCM7 most of the time. Now, if you are eating a bunch of cheese and you don't tolerate A1 milk very well, you might investigate where the milk in your cheese came from. Of course, nobody heard of A1 or A2 milk till a few decades ago, when we were able to get the amino acid sequence of milk protein. Even then, it did not make any difference till a test was developed to see if your cow was A1 or A2. Life is complex, and even A2 cows may give milk with a little A1. This has probably been true throughout history. In the last decade, the common man has been exerting common sense, and this has been reflected in industry. Who can remember buying organically grown food 30 years ago? You could, but you really had to look for it. Now there is an organic food section in almost every grocery store, and Walmart has sales on A2 milk. Upon rereading this article, I feel I need to make a few things a little clearer. I talked about A1 and A2 milk as though these were the two choices. There are at least 12 variants of the bovine BCM gene, and A1 and A2 are just the most common. A1 milk may have some A2 in it, as the cow may not be homozygous for A1 genes. As you remember, you get a pair of chromosomes, and one chromosome may code for pure A1, and the other may code for A2, or you could have one of the other variants of the BCM gene. So when I say A1, I mean mostly A1, and the same with A2. If the cow had a pair of A2 chromosomes, it would be almost all A2. It appears most cow milk was pure A2 through most of recorded history. I concentrated on the gut effects of A1 as opposed to A2, as this is the most common and obvious symptom and is due to the BCM present in A1 milk. When we look closer at BCM, we see that this can be absorbed in the body and even pass through the blood-brain barrier. I am more confident saying that if you have any degree of milk intolerance, that you should try A2, but the BCM7 affects numerous opioid receptors, not just the ones in the gut. It can affect receptors in the nervous, immune, and endocrine systems. There have been anecdotal reports of A2 having beneficial effects in autism and schizophrenia. To sum it up, everyone agrees that BCM7 is released from A1 but not A2. Almost everyone agrees that this may result in slower GI transit and gastrointestinal problems in some humans. BCM7 has been associated with numerous organ systems and in a few people seems to be related to immune and nervous system dysfunction. We must realize that A1 has been the predominant milk in the Western world and has been drunk by billions of people without any significant problems. Most adults do not drink a lot of milk anyway, so though this article may be of use to a very small percentage of people, most will go on with their life drinking the same A1 milk they have been drinking since they were a child. I am slightly more concerned with very young children. Some do have GI problems, such as cramps and constipation, that lead the parents to try soy milk or perhaps manufactured milk. I do believe they should give A2 a try, as I believe this milk is much better for the children than the other two options. By the way, breast milk does contain some BCM7, but this does not seem to be nearly as potent as bovine BCM7. Milk from other types of animals, such as goats, is A2 milk. There have also been epigenetic studies done on A1 versus A2 milk in mice. In mice, at least, A2 seems to induce a much more anti-inflammatory gut biome and an increase in the production of short-chain fatty acids, which is a good thing. Now, a comment unrelated to A2 milk. Over the last couple years, I have become much more aware of the effects of epigenetics on our gut biome, and also with what appears to be the rapidity in which this occurs. I still believe that certain elements of our diet may benefit one type of bacteria over another and change the biome, but now I believe that epigenetic changes may have an almost equal effect in not necessarily changing the species of bacteria, but affecting the expression of genes secondary to a new gut environment. I also believe that trace contaminants, which we thought were completely benign as they did not affect the growth of bacteria in the biome, may be nonetheless changing the expression of the bacterial genes, and this effect is harder to recognize. My next book is going to be The Human Genome for the Common Man, especially as it relates to diet. I must write that book first so you can understand the next, Epigenetics and Diet. Again, this is part of the Health Topics podcast, which I address various topics. Some actually have nothing to do with health, but my goal is to get you to buy my other books, which is how I earn my living, at least a portion of my living.